Hello and welcome to 105 The Ticket's video game podcast from Cold Omaha. I'm Henry Bell, and joining me in studio today are Max Hamilton and John Carson. We've got a very special treat for you guys this week. We're going to be airing my interview with Steve Downes, the voice behind Master Chief, at the end of the show, so make sure you stick around. There wasn't a ton of news this week, but let's get things started with the Final Fantasy XIV Mac version being pulled off of digital distribution. Did you guys see this? I couldn't believe it.
I've been kind of focused playing the PC version this week.
So I guess I should start out asking that. Max, have you had a chance to play Final Fantasy XIV?
No, I know when it initially released, it was pretty bad. That kind of scared me away, and I know that there were the updates fixing it, and now it's pretty popular and actually one of the more popular games out there, but it's just, it doesn't appeal to me.
As a 10-year veteran of World of Warcraft, I've actually been pretty tempted by this because everyone's saying it's currently the premier MMO to play.
It's really good.
I want a fat chocobo.
Yeah. No, you get cool mounts like fat chocobos. You have Magitech armor from Final Fantasy VI. They added flying stuff to the new expansion.
Which, isn't that gated similarly to the new Warlords of Draenor gating, where you have to explore the whole zone first?
From what I've heard, like, they have these little aether points, or like basically teleportation points,
sure,
that you have to like visit each one of those in Heavensward to get flying mounts to work there. So, I mean, it's not...
Still better than gold than flying cloud serpent training.
And that was rough. I mean, that's something I can get behind for gating flying mounts, because I want to be able to see things from the ground. Henry's rolling his eyes right now because he doesn't agree with this.
I love to fly.
I know, I do too.
I really do.
But once you put flying as something that's accessible
Played City of Heroes?
Yeah.
I've explored every inch of that city. You ever played DC Universe Online?
Yeah.
Explored every
inch. I jumped and glided around a lot.
Just saying.
Hey,
it would have been more interesting if you'd explored it from the ground.
I do like exploring it from the ground, though, because it feels almost like cheating flying to the spot where I'm supposed to do my quest and then fly out.
Well, and I'm not going to try and convince you. We represent, for those listening, we represent the two sides of this argument. This is why there was a big debate when World of Warcraft was possibly taking out flying.
Yep, yep.
Literally two opposing viewpoints.
Just standing on the porch just yelling at each other for a while.
Exactly. Yeah, so that got a little real there, but yes, that is exactly how it went. So, go on. Can you tell us a little bit more about Final Fantasy XIV? Have you noticed any particular issues with it? Like, are there any like glaring things that have been left out, or have you experienced any like issues on the PC version in terms of like how well it runs or anything like that?
Not really. It does take a little bit more from your PC than other MMOs have in the past. Like, I had a harder time running Final Fantasy XIV than I did running WoW.
Which I would expect, because WoW
is
a newer
game, and they want that Final Fantasy aesthetic. So they want it to look really nice.
Which Final Fantasy aesthetic?
13.
Okay.
So they want that level of, wow, this looks really, really pretty right now, and not something that looks kind of dated art style-wise. They want their art style, and they want their just wow factor.
Right. It's the irony of Final Fantasy games. They're always pushing the art to the very, very edge, which makes it inevitably horribly dated. Go back and play Final Fantasy VII. Wait for the remake.
Yeah, wait for the...
Block hands.
You know what? Go play 8, but don't go play 8, because that game is just super ugly now.
And... Well,
it just looks like you're looking at
a
super pixelated painting.
Not a fan of the story
either. But anyways, Final Fantasy XIV, I haven't really noticed anything. There have been some server queues.
Sure.
But that's always been the case with 14.
Yeah, even WoW still has server queues.
Yeah, and it's like maybe a minute.
And
is that
only during like high volume, or is that all the time?
Oh, it's usually like at night.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's 5
o'clock
nothing
later
too bad.
Kind of thing.
As a game, as it compares to WoW, like... I'm more engaged with the story in Final Fantasy XIV than I am with WoW.
Now, what about the quests?
The quests are pretty basic.
I've heard they're very fetch questy.
Oh, yeah.
Like, run here and talk to this person, then go back and talk to the person who told you to talk to
or
the first person.
Or go kill these things and then come back. Those kind of things. You're usually rewarded with some sort of a cutscene.
Yeah.
Which is nice.
Wow. Wait, like a full cutscene, or is it like in-engine?
It's an engine.
Okay.
Like,
cool.
it's character models like talking to each other.
Sure.
But you get a better story from it than I am like clicking next on the World of Warcraft.
Yeah.
Like,
you know, I used to
scroll.
Read those quests.
I didn't for about 6 years, and then one time I was like, I need to freshen up WoW. Let's start reading everything and learn the story of this thing. But
anyways, though, so it sounds like it's a pretty solid MMO.
Yeah.
Which makes me all the more surprised to hear this news. So Here, so apparently for the last, gosh, it's been out for what, 3 years now or so?
About, yeah.
Yeah, and for the last 3 years, people trying to play on Macs have been left out in the cold. They've been forced to use Boot Camp, basically, or some other, like...
They'd have to put Windows on
it. Yeah, second bootable drive. You have to run it through Windows because it uses DirectX.
Yeah.
And, which is proprietary, for those that don't know, to Microsoft platforms. And they finally released a Mac client recently, and people were freaking out because the Mac client is literally just the Windows version with a Mac wrapper around it, which is just programming speak for they put a bunch of hooks and calls to make it so that the Mac could barely interface with it. And it's all done in real time, which means the game looks and runs worse than it does on PC
that has to be really taxing. From my experience with Mac computers, like, everything is custom built for that, like, if it's going to run well on there.
Yeah.
So if you just half-ass it, this doesn't surprise me that it's not working well.
Right, exactly. Well, and it does appear that that's what happened. And what's interesting is that we actually had the lead developer come out and say, he apologized, but the real issue that they're saying is a problem, it's not the quality of the port, it's that their system requirements they originally listed were not realistic. They had to revise them about a week before the game came out and after pre-orders had been done.
Which is really weird because you have more of a stationary target with Macs than you do with PCs.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
why don't you just say what model of Mac or newer?
Yeah,
it
it's
runs
like,
on.
Oh, you need a 2012 MacBook Pro.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, there you go, or better.
Yeah,
like you're not gonna put it on a MacBook Air or anything. But.
So the interesting thing is, because so many people complained, they have completely pulled it off of digital distribution. I think they encouraged people to seek refunds. And this just is sounding awfully familiar to me. I don't know about you guys. I'm having flashbacks to Arkham Knight, not even a month ago. You know, this is the second big game we've seen pulled off digital distribution for the quality not being there at launch. And I'm just wondering, are we gonna see fully complete games anymore? I mean, even The Witcher is continuing to receive patches that are improving playability, and I was saying people should buy it at launch even when it was broken, just because it is a good game.
Yeah.
But, you know, CD Projekt Red is considered a traditionally very user-friendly, like, they're pro-consumer. And so even they are doing this to people. And you can say, you know, PCs are diverse and they're different, but... You know, until about 2008 or 9, I was sure that every game that I bought would work. I never had to think, like, I thought maybe a disc would be defective, but certainly not the code.
Yeah. I mean, it's every game these days doesn't come out finished. I don't know how I phrase that right. Nothing comes out finished these days.
Sure.
There's always day one patches. They always do something to skirt by certification.
Well, yes and no.
Not always, but it seems like with a lot of the larger games that are coming out.
Well, what I was going to say is I think that a lot of those day one patches, though, aren't. But a lot of day one patches aren't bug fixes. They are. It's DRM, basically.
Yeah.
It's anti-piracy measures. So, like, with Mortal Kombat, famously, you had to download, like, half the game at launch because they didn't want people to have the entire code.
Yeah.
Same thing with GTA 5. Same thing with Wolfenstein. I went to the store and bought it, and because I didn't want to have to download a 65-gig game, installed the 60-gig DVDs. There's multiple DVDs, and then found out that I had to download 20 gigabytes of updates on day one. And it's just, it's so upsetting. It's just so upsetting. You know, I remember when I was when I first moved to the Twin Cities, I got StarCraft II, and I had no internet at my new house.
Oh, I bet you were so happy about
that. I bought StarCraft II, and I could not play it until I literally had to carry my tower over to a neighbor's house, plug into their internet, authenticate the game, and then I could play offline. Like, just so frustrating. So I think some of that is anti-DRM stuff, but you're right. We are almost inevitably seeing day one patches. I mean, I really am trying to think. MKX was broken at launch.
Yep.
Witcher was broken at launch. Arkham Knight was broken at launch.
I mean, even for console versions, I played a ton of Mortal Kombat X. But on PS4, like, there was a big patch right away.
Yeah.
It wasn't broken like the PC version was, obviously. That's
sure.
a completely different thing.
And not every, it wasn't broken on PC for everyone, was it? Because I played it pretty darn close. I think I played it on day one or two, and I didn't have any issues.
It was that first day at midnight, whenever
okay.
it launched,
oh,
and
okay,
then like
okay, yeah.
people got the executable. They could like get to the character select screen, and then it just
yeah. Crashed. And then when you verify your game cache, it was making you re-download the
yeah,
entire game.
Yeah, there was
game.
Some sort of like memory leak that yeah. was happening. It was a like, huge mess.
And I think part of the problem is that people are so, I think developers are getting so comfortable with early access and similar programs that they have just, no one does QA anymore. Nobody does quality testing of any kind. They're, the beta testers, I mean, we heard the statistics on Arkham Knight. There were 10 PC beta testers. Yep. That's insane.
So going back to Final Fantasy XIV,
yeah.
MMOs typically have a pretty long beta period. I'm surprised that that's something that didn't come out of a beta period for the Mac. I don't know if they had one for the Mac
at all.
Well,
here's the thing. I don't know. I read through like 3 or 4 articles about this that go into great detail about some of the technical complications they've come up against. And apparently, the way the game was coded, it cannot be recoded to run natively without recoding
like
from the ground
everything.
Up. Yeah, literally. Yeah. Because it has to do with the way that the what do they use? OpenGL? I always blank on this. What do they use for Mac? It's like it's some open source version of DirectX.
OpenGL sounds right. If anybody wants to correct us,
yeah,
please
feel free.
Let us know
but,
in the comments.
But basically, because they use an entirely different like hook program, it can't just easily cleanly transfer over. And so I guess I get it, but then my other question is, why are they charging $60 if you already own the PC version? Because then all these guys who were playing it on PC could have just tried the Mac version and there would be no backlash. Right. People wouldn't be freaking out. You know, World of Warcraft, you can download whatever you literally any Blizzard game, yep. actually. Most games, you can download a Mac or a PC version. Everything I buy on the Humble Store, I can even get a Linux version half the time.
The one thing with Blizzard stuff is that they plan it from the ground up for Mac. That's the thing. With
Now, I am in the camp that says if you're gaming on a Mac, you're doing it wrong, but still, like...
I mean, there are a lot of people who play games on Macs, but they also built Final Fantasy XIV for the PS3 and PS4 as well.
Well, and that's what is interesting to me, though, because I know
they
it's
can
a,
get it to work there. Just
The PS3 uses a custom branch of the same software or of the same, the same DirectX type program that Mac uses, but I think it must just be different enough.
They might be twisting it some way that it doesn't like whatsoever.
Exactly. I have to assume. But, you know, I just have trouble believing there's no way to make it work. Anyways, though, so they've pulled it off shelves. I'm not exactly sure when they intend to put it back up because the reason for pulling it was simply inaccurate system requirements. Yeah. Or at least that's the reason they're giving. We'll see if they're actually going to improve it or if they're just going to give people a chance to return it and then they're just going to start selling it again.
I'll be keeping up with this.
Yeah, I'll be interested, too. Anyways, let's move it right along. Team Fortress 2, Steam is releasing another really big update for Team Fortress 2. And when I say really big, I'm talking about like on par with the HATS update. They're going to be pushing, it's going to have new maps, new balances. They're going to be changing rebalancing a lot of the custom guns that have been considered useless by a lot of people in the community. I heard that they may be redoing like 2 of the classes literally from the ground up, which is pretty exciting because it did get a little stale after, God, how long has it even been? That was like 06 that came out or something?
Around then,
yeah. Like, good God, that is a long-lived first-person shooter.
Do you know who they're supposed to be remaking?
I don't want to be wrong, but I want to say it was like the Spy is getting heavy changes and the Engineer is getting really heavy changes.
Okay.
And actually,
I think those would be fun to play around with.
There are rumors that this patch is actually part of something bigger that they're building to, which is they think they're going to do some kind of... this is all speculation now, but they think they're going to do some kind of Spy versus Engineer specific themed thing.
Because
they've seen a bunch of achievements, but challenges and stuff that require spies and engineers to seek each other out. Which I like. I think that's a great dynamic.
Yeah.
I love playing a spy. And so there's all of that, and everyone's pretty excited about that. There's a lot of these changes apparently were very long in coming. I can't say personally because I haven't really played Team Fortress 2 since the HATS update. I bought it, you know, when it cost money. I actually bought it. And like, so I really liked the base game. Obviously, with the patches, I was still happy with, you know, bug fixes and stuff. But nowadays it plays to me a lot like something like Call of Duty. I mean, they literally have servers up where people are just like, okay, you just shoot me and I'm just going to heal. I'm going to have my friend heal me constantly. And that's how I'm going to make the achievement so I can get a gun that's 10,000 damage taken or whatever. And it's just, I don't like that kind of gimmicky silliness. It's only good for kids who have, I mean, I used to have more time for this kind of stuff. Yep. But now that I have a full-time job and I'm doing a podcast and stuff like that, I don't have 40 hours a week to dedicate, you know, a full-time job's worth of time to unlocking hats and guns. Like, I just don't, sure. I don't care enough. But that said, the big push with this update, it sounds like, is they're going to be rolling out weapon skins. And the way that's going to work is there will be a separate part of this update that costs $6 and it unlocks challenge maps that when you challenges that when you complete them, you can get some of these unique skins. And a lot of people are a little concerned. They've also added in animations to be able to show off your gun in first person and stuff, which all smacks very much of Counter-Strike Go, mm-hmm. Where they have a ridiculous market of buying and selling gun skins and knife skins for ostensibly real-life money. And it's crazy. It's gambling and all this stuff. And, you know, a lot of people really like it. Personally, I find it a little intimidating and not super fun. Yeah. I'd rather just be able to not have an ugly knife. I miss the days of going to FPS Banana and just downloading gun skins. And it was free and it was fun and nobody else could see them because who cares? Now everybody wants everyone to see their cool gun skins. How do you guys feel about the whole like hats and gun skins and all that stuff? Like,
I'm completely on board with you. I mean, first off, just the general idea of free-to-play games doesn't appeal to me. The only one I've ever played is Hearthstone for the most part, or played religiously. But I mean, totally on board with the full-time job, don't have enough time to chase after silly challenges or achievements. Just doing the same thing over and over to get something that's cosmetic. It doesn't do anything for me.
Max? Actually, can I interject really quick? Speaking of games that are accessible, have you guys, either of you gotten a chance to play the Dirty Bomb beta?
No.
Have not.
No.
I have been playing it this week, and I adore it. Yep. It is like Battlefield 1948 style class-based, objective-based shooter. And it is super fun, and the unlockables don't feel unreal. Like, the guns feel well-balanced. I did not feel underpowered just starting out the game.
Do they have, like, cool unlockables?
Or
is it mostly just, like,
it's free-to-play, and you can get, you open, like, load packages that have cards in them.
Yep.
Each card is, there's a card for every class, like a card type for every class, and then the perks and guns that your class can use are based on what's on the card.
Okay.
And there's, basically, you can have up to three perks, and then there's, like, three cosmetic rarities above that for the cards, but all those do is change the looks.
That almost sounds like the Mass Effect 3
multiplayer
stuff. Like, they had like packs and stuff like that where you would unlock characters or weapons and stuff.
Yeah,
like,
isn't that what Inquisition's doing as well?
Yeah. Yeah, that's
but kind of no, I mean,
I don't know. This feels
a
lot. Let's remember though, this is not a $60 title.
Sure. Sure.
So it's a little different from those ones.
It sounds cool, though.
They're not double-dipping. But yeah, absolutely. Anyways, I was just saying, that's not a bad one to check out if you are someone who's older and busy and like would like to just be able to play a first-person shooter without having to prestige.
Yeah.
Sorry, but as you were saying.
Max, bringing up Hearthstone, are you going to buy any of those new characters?
Okay, the character skins do absolutely nothing
for me. Right.
I'm kind of...
But what if you want to be a different mage?
Well, then you can buy it, but I mean, I'm not going to.
Right. I was just curious if you're. No, I'd much rather spend it on the expansions, which I'm totally willing to do, or card packs.
They're rumoring that new one.
Right. The tournament. Now. Yeah. It should be good. I mean, they haven't disappointed yet.
Right.
Slightly disappointed when they release skins for $20 or whatever it's going for. But there's stories out there like that famous or infamous Forbes article where the guy spent like $400 on card packs when it first launched, you know?
I haven't spent a dime, and I win all the time. I mean, I don't. I love Hearthstone.
Yeah. Right. You know, you can disassemble or whatever the technical term for it is cards
disenchant.
That you own. To craft new ones, and it's a very fair game. It is technical.
And the more you play, the more you put into it, the more you get from it.
Right. I've been playing it nonstop. It's great.
Yep. Absolutely. But anyways, though, back to TF2, like, have you, like, John, what do you think about the gun skins? Does it bother you? What do you think about the $6 buy-in?
I don't know, because people have been buying and selling skins or really hats or different items for TF2 for quite a while.
Sure.
So, I mean, having new customizations for those characters isn't new to the game. But the buy-in for the challenges, on one end, they've never really had you pay for a new content pack before. But on this end, you kind of mentioned that it's been since like 2006 since that game's come out, and it's been free to play ever since.
Well, that's not accurate.
I mean, not ever since, but I mean, it went free to play, what, like
2010 or something?
Yeah, like 5 years ago, 4 years ago. I mean, for the people who really, really like that game, they probably wouldn't mind paying $6 for it. It's not a steep price for it.
Here's what I want to know. Yeah. Can I get it for free since I spent $30 or whatever? Maybe it was $20 when it first came out.
You could sell some of those CSGO guns.
Right. I don't actually have any because I'm not going to pay into it. But I tell you what, I got my little brother's got tons
there
of them.
There you go. Just have him send you some Steam
money. Hey, send me some op skin you don't want. I know you don't use it.
Just write me a Steam check.
Right. Exactly. A Steam check.
It's a brave new world.
Anyways, though, so it should be interesting. I guess I don't really care as long as they're not spending development time on these like colored guns. I'm sure that doesn't take up too much of their time, but still, I worry only because, as I understand, a lot of the bugs they're fixing in this patch are things that have existed for years that needed to be patched. I mean, one of the big things that they're going to be adding, just to give you guys an idea of the needed patches they're doing, is matchmaking. Like proper,
just go in and be like, I just want to play a match.
Yep, exactly.
That's good.
Yeah, you don't have to go through a server
browser.
That's
really nice.
That's really nice. Anyways, though, let's keep it moving. We got that interview at the end of the show, guys. Make sure you stick around. This is actually a fascinating story. So some guy he followed an employee into the office of Digital Extreme after seeing a character model in like a top story window of a tower. I guess he was interested in knowing where they worked for a while, and he just ended up loitering around outside and following someone in the ultimate security hole that no one can really fix.
Just act like you're someone's friend,
right? To require ID badges, I guess, with your picture on it. I mean, I don't even know. That's rough, but that's fishing for you, though. Yeah. But or social engineering, I guess that would be. But they, anyways, this guy breaks in or follows this guy into the building, and he says he proceeds to spend the day at work, just moving between different office chairs, acting like he belongs there. He gets lunch when they call for lunch. He just helps himself to the lunchroom, and he actually stumbled onto some information about this unannounced game. For those who are saying Digital Extreme, who's that? They did Warframe, is probably their biggest, most recognizable title. The free to play third person action shooter game.
Did they do Dark Sector?
I'm not sure.
Because I thought Warframe was originally Dark Sector, and
you
then
might
they
be
had
right.
To, like,
actually, that's
it.
Sounding. Yeah, I think you're right.
But. Yeah, go on.
Oh, and so he found out about this unannounced game. Apparently, it's an action card game called Keystone. When they say action card game, I'm guessing it's something kind of similar to what is the name? Do you guys remember that indie game, Hand of Fate? Card action. It's like kind of like Batman Arkham Asylum combat, but it's a card game.
Like you're dealt cards, and you kind of go through a path through these cards. Different combat scenarios, and is that what it's like?
Yes.
Okay. I've seen videos of it.
There's different. Basically, there's random cards, and you build a deck, and then you play against that deck. Your equipment is in it, but also all of the you'll get a gorge, and in this gorge, every time that this card comes up, no matter how many playthroughs you do, the gorge has a layout, and it'll show you in the gorge, and maybe there you get a random chance for X number of enemies to appear, and of X type of enemy. And it's all very, it feels like a card game, but then the combat itself, your character loads in, it's a third person action game, and then each card descends on top of him and loads in each piece of equipment you have. So like your shield, which allows you to parry, is a piece of equipment.
Okay.
Your weapon is a piece of equipment. Armor is each a different card. They're all cards.
Did you ever play Kingdom Hearts Chain of Memories?
Oh,
it was originally a Game Boy Advance game, and then they re-released it on PS2.
I think so. Was that the one that had all the green? Well, they all had a bunch of green orbs.
Thank you. That's your help.
It was like a top down. Well, it's like a third person top-down kind of.
Yeah, it was like an isometric thing, like going through the levels from the original Kingdom Hearts.
I played it, but I think I was real drunk, so I don't
remember. That's also kind of an action card game, because you have a deck that you start out with that are different attacks, and it'll shuffle and give you a new hand.
Sure, sure. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I remember, because it reminded me of, like, Bait and Kaitos.
Yep.
Or Bat and Kaitos. I don't know how to pronounce
There's
that.
A lot of cool battle systems, like action battle systems that come from cards.
It's actually really interesting. But anyways, all that said, we know nothing about this card game, and I don't want to...
I hope it's like Kingdom Hearts.
I hope it's like a lot of things, but... I mean, for all we know, it's going to turn out to be just a mobile ripoff or something. We don't even know if they're the ones developing it. Just be helping with the development.
Yep. Just stick to Hearthstone.
Basically, the guy hung out in
Keystone.
Basically, the guy hung out in the office all day and didn't get
ridiculous.
Caught.
Ridiculous.
Yeah, and then went home and posted about it online. And the developer responded and basically they were very polite and Canadian about it, but basically said, yeah, we appreciate that you guys really like our games and stuff, but this is trespassing.
Yep.
Please don't do this.
It says, please respect our privacy and know that, like any business would, we completely discourage any and all unlawful attempts to enter our relay, which is something from...
Well, like I had said Canadian before thing. We started recording, that it was a very Canadian response, and they even say at the start, you know, Canadians are known for being welcoming and polite.
Yep.
It's great. It's hilarious. Anyways, though... Seriously, guys, I know that a lot of people out there are really big fans of independent studios individual studios, but let's take it easy and not break the law just to find out something like that. It's not that big of a deal.
Well, that reminds me of it was like a year or two ago when people were being being given a tour through Valve, and people took pictures of some screens that were in there that showed like Left 4 Dead 3 or Source 2 and like. What kind of leaked those
things? You know what needs to happen is developers need to all get their IT people on making fake game screensavers.
Yep.
Just like the Tony Hawk thing when the dudes the chef took a picture of himself at the Tony Hawk event and then accidentally leaked Tony Hawk 5. All the screensavers should be hilarious, far-fetched sequels that will never happen, just so that people stop believing leaks all the time.
Gun 2.
Seriously. Anyways, though, let's keep it moving, because there's still some other quite interesting stuff. Actually, I think I'm going to come back to the next topic. I would like to skip ahead to something a little similar and also crazy. A 17-year-old has been arrested for his involvement in the Lizard Squad hacking group do you guys remember what country this was in? Was it,
it's a European company.
Yeah, it was
company.
European company. Anyways, he was arrested and found guilty of 50,700 charges.
Finland.
Finland, thank you.
Apparently, that's only worth about 2 years in prison.
And apparently, it's not even worth
that. Sentence.
Oh, yeah, it's a suspended sentence.
He will not be serving any time. He's been asked to refrain from those kinds of online activities, basically, and he's being... required to like assist in
he's relegated
other
to
hackers.
AOL chat rooms.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, apparently not, because apparently he immediately took to Twitter after being released from police custody and started bragging about how he was untouchable and how Finland would never extradite him to the US.
But is he untouchable, Henry?
Well, funny you should ask. We actually had an update on this story today. So apparently what happened is he called in a bomb threat at one point to the CEO of Daybreak, John Smedley, and his plane was grounded, and he is really upset to hear that he's not going to be serving time for all of this. Now, the kid is 17, so he's technically a minor, but John sounds like he wants to take it to the family.
Yeah, he basically cut a wrestling promo on the kid on Twitter.
Yeah, seriously, if you haven't seen it, check out the Twitter feed. It's really...
it's quite lengthy. There's quite a few tweets.
Kotaku has an article.
The dang character limit.
Yeah, go check it out. It's from the 8th.
Yeah, and it's very, it's actually, he was more aggressive than maybe I would have been, considering that we're referring to a minor, but then again, we're also talking about a terrorist threat.
Yeah,
his
life was threatened.
Yeah, exactly.
But there's two things to consider. One, a CEO of a company to take to an angry rant on Twitter doesn't speak...
I mean, I don't think it's very becoming of him, but I also don't think he's wrong.
If you're in an emotional situation... I've said some things on Twitter that I
look at other people in the gaming industry that have said, you know, he has more cause than most to go on a rant online, but other people have lost their jobs over it and made quite a mess of themselves publicly. But the other thing to consider is going after the family.
Yeah.
Warranted or not?
Well, in America, that's the law. I mean, I don't think that, I don't think it's unwarranted. If my son firebombed a car dealership, I would be responsible for paying for those vehicles. What, you think that the owner should just be out all that money because my kid was under 18? I mean, and plus,
no, not
17
necessarily.
Is. I mean, 17 is obviously debatable because 18 is the official you're an adult age. So, yeah. And obviously this kid, I mean, obviously he wasn't mature per se, but he was, you know, not a child.
He knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
I think at the very least, push for a harder sentence on him.
Well, you can't, what he can do is take them, his parents to civil court because it happened on American soil or whatever. But, or... I'm not a lawyer. This is not legal advice, et cetera. Disclaimer. But, you know, in America, he has that right. He can't lean on the Finnish government.
Yep.
Like, he can't say, hey reconsider.
Finland,
you guys have,
if you could.
Yeah, exactly. And apparently they have pretty tough extradition laws, so it's not like the FBI is going to be charging him, from what I understand.
Sure. Going after the family does feel a little bit dirty, but also
it makes me feel weird, but I don't think he's wrong.
It's one of those things like what else are you going to do if
they grounded
multiple flights?
I mean, they shut down a major international airport.
Yeah.
That's a big deal.
The weird feeling may come from just him angrily calling out the family.
It's not the family, it's this kid.
Yeah, well, and what do you think about the kid was posting on Twitter about how he's untouchable and all. I mean, he was taunting his victims, ostensibly. I mean, I don't know. You know, I don't care too much either way because this story doesn't personally affect me.
Right.
But I do think it's very interesting, and I am shocked that you could be charged with over 50,000 counts of anything and serve no time.
50,000!
Yeah, that's
a lot. Well, he's untouchable.
Right, evidently. Untouchable. I mean, apparently he's not wrong, so... I don't know. I think at very least it'd be nice if they'd, like, you know, put an ankle bracelet on him and tell him he's on house arrest or something. I mean, for God's sakes. Anyways, whatever. Who cares? You know, it's just, it's very, certainly a very interesting story.
I'd try him as an adult.
Anyways, though, let's take it back to the topic we jumped over earlier, which is Smite has arrived on Xbox One in open beta, and... You know, I've been hearing pretty good things. I know none of us here have personally gotten a chance to play it, but we've all seen it, it sounds like.
Yep.
Fairly extensively. I know when we were doing an event at Treasure Island Casino, one of my buddies brought his Xbox with him because we had to spend the night there before the event, and we hooked it up and were able to play Smite on there. And oh my goodness, like, I was watching because we only had one controller, but I've played enough of it. But I couldn't believe it. It looks like it made a great transition.
Sure. I mean, it's a behind-the-back MOBA. So
yeah, third-person, a la League of Legends or Dota.
Down to the ground, so you can actually control it with a controller, and it feel. I mean, that's one of those things that's an easy transition to a console.
Basically, the idea behind it is it not to kind of pull in the casual crowd and kind of ease them into the MOBA scene?
I think yes and no. I mean, I think that it's... I wouldn't call Smite more casual than League of Legends or any other MOBA. I would say that Smite is just coming at it from a different angle.
Different perspective. So people who play like third-person games...
That's why I said angle.
Like, I could get into something like Diablo or, I guess, Dota at that point, too. I've never really been super into Dota or League of Legends. But I knew the whole point-and-click nature of it because I played StarCraft or Warcraft.
Right.
That was easy to get into. But the people who are used to using controllers to control, like... Call of Duty or any or like Uncharted, like it's a little bit easier for them to get into or wrap their minds around how these characters control and how they work.
I mean, that makes sense. You know, what I'm wondering about is I wonder if they're going to have to rebalance the game, because I have a feeling it's probably melee heroes are going to have a slight advantage now because you're using you don't have a mouse anymore to aim when you're playing as the third person, you know, because you do have to actually aim in this game, unlike most MOBAs.
Yep.
Like, it's not... Everything is a skill shot. It's not just the skill shots that you have to aim. And so I wonder if melee champions have a slight advantage because they don't really have to aim nearly as much.
Yeah, that's kind of get in there and hack and slash.
Yeah, I mean, it's similar to how, like, every time that they port most third-person PC games to consoles, they'll have lock-on. Like, GTA has lock-on for consoles, but you do not play with lock-on on PC. You're already overpowered without it. So.
Unless you're playing with the controller on there.
Sure. If you're a madman, yeah.
Right. I am a madman.
You are insane.
But one of the sites I write for, XBLA Fans, like, there's a lot of people on that staff that are
very, very into Smite. They've been playing the closed beta for a while now, mm-hmm. and they seem to really, really like it. I'm going to say really a few more times.
No, well, I think you're right, because I've talked to a couple people who haven't played any other MOBA, but they're into it just because it's free. It's on, you know, it's right on the Live Arcade, like, front page. And
there's not a lot out like it on the consoles.
Exactly. I think it's kind of like a Diablo 3 type thing, where it's just like, oh my god, desperation genre mm-hmm. for consoles. Like, we don't get these games very often.
And I know this is something you wanted to talk about, but, like, how do you feel about the... like them doing betas and stuff for this kind of stuff on consoles. I guess I'll go into my feelings on it. For a game like this that's so multiplayer focused,
sure,
and it's free, like there's no buy into it. So what's the harm of doing a beta process for it?
Well, let's not forget, you can spend money.
Sure,
it's just,
sure.
It's free to play, but yeah, let's make sure we clarify that.
Yep. Like most MOBAs, there are microtransactions, whether it's costumes or characters. Sure. I don't know how they do it with Smite. But something like this, as opposed to something that you pay for to get into the beta access, or like early access, I guess.
Sure. Here's my question, though. The game has been out for how long on PC? I mean, when does the beta end? I mean,
soon.
Also,
I mean, it just went into open beta.
No, so. But what I mean is, like, when does the game launch officially? When do they say it's not in beta anymore? Because the Xbox version is already running an older version of the game than the PC version. Yep. It's about one or two updates behind.
It's probably when they implement that stuff and make sure it runs well on Xbox.
I'm just saying, though, couldn't you argue that it's been tested already on PC? And that, I mean, because I can't imagine that. I mean, once you get all the hooks and everything down, I can't imagine adding a new champion is going to break the game on console.
Do you know if it's cross compatible?
It's not, I would assume. And I would be shocked if it was. Oh, you mean, wait, a single account?
I mean, cross compatible, like play.
No,
like,
I can't. Okay. They don't do that. That'd be so unfair for the PC guys, would have such a huge advantage.
Sure. They're working with a different architecture for how things work, whether it's computer to computer or Xbox to Xbox. I mean, it's a different beast altogether.
Sure, I know. You know what I'm getting at. I mean, I'm just saying it's more tested than...
I'm surprised that it's been in a beta for months and months now. It's been a long-ass time that I've been hearing about it.
People, I just worry that we keep seeing these games with these extended betas that just go on and on and on. I mean, is DayZ ever going to come out? I mean...
I thought it did.
I don't think so. I should hope not, because it's certainly not done.
Gotcha.
But anyways, my point is, I just worry about seeing early access on consoles.
I really do. I have downloaded an early access game on Xbox One.
Elite
Dangerous. So what I like that they're doing with it, like, you can buy Elite Dangerous for $31 on there. Or you can download the demo, which is the full thing. You can only play it for a couple hours, though.
I like that.
But it does give you that toe in the water to see like the experience or not, because if you want to give money to them, you want to be sure that you want to give money
that
to
actually
them.
Removes most of my complaints, honestly.
And that's how they're going forward with the game preview stuff on Xbox One, is they want some sort of hour to 2 hour experience for people.
See, now that once you standardize it, I don't like it anymore, because then we start going to start seeing vertical slices. I mean, then we're going to start seeing alien, colonial marines.
But a lot of early access games are vertical slices to begin with.
No, but I get that. But if it's going to be a vertical slice, it needs to be representative of the whole game.
Sure.
I mean, it needs to be a reasonable, representation of what you're going to be paying for when you do shell out the money. Because if in Elite, all the demo time was spent like customizing a ship. I haven't played Elite, so
I probably could customize the ship.
That's my point, is if you spend all your time customizing the ship and you're thinking the game's all about customizing ships or something, and then you find out it's actually a really, really slow-paced space exploration type game.
But at that point, you don't put your money in.
Well, what if you don't find out until it's too late?
Research it.
Well, yeah.
Then you should play demos better.
Yeah. I agree. Well, you guys know what I'm getting at.
Right.
I'm saying,
absolutely.
What happens, there are games that drop off drastically in quality towards the end of the game because they've run out of development time. Or, like I said, they can be fabricated wholesale like Aliens Colonial Marines tech demo was, where it was not in the game at all.
Right.
Like,
but I mean, through development, things do change. So, we could run into those instances where something that's in the early access part won't make it to that final game. What you liked about that early access thing might not be the final game. It's Early access is a weird thing.
I don't like it. I just don't. Sure. I mean, I go back to betas and thank players for playing them. Don't expect players to thank you for giving them the privilege of paying you to pay for.
Right.
You should be paying them.
Well, that's also, yeah, that's where we get into that thing where companies are using their players as their QA testers these days and not giving any compensation for it.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's messy. I don't want to get into it right now.
Exactly.
It's
that's, well, they compensate when they give out free DLC and free, you know,
what
ditch their season passes. No, I was just, you know, Unity and the Dead.
Oh, you mean when the game was so?
Oh, right. No, that's
I'm gonna call that an isolated incident, and I wouldn't say that that's a representative.
Twas a joke.
But my bad. All right. Well, moving along. We've got, like I mentioned earlier, more Witcher 3 patches.
Hey, I hear that game's going to be, like, better soon.
Yeah, I'm waiting for one more patch, because apparently they're going to fix the inventory, and then I'm actually going to go back and play it. So basically, this one is supposed, just really quick, this patch is addressing some of the movement complaints and a bunch of bug fixes. But the big one is, like, the weird delay when you're trying to move your character around, where it feels like he is... It's not that the game has, like, an input latency. It's that when you turn left and you're looking forward, your character turns left, like, naturally. And so you want to just... In a video game, you don't want that many frames of
There's
animation.
There's weird,
just,
realistic inertia with it. Right. And it's, yeah.
I don't... If you're playing on a controller and you just spin the analog stick in a circle, your character takes forever to
make a
full circle.
Instead of just rotating on one spot.
Yeah. And so, sorry.
No, I was just going to say that, I mean, on the consoles, obviously the PCs are ahead anyways, but they are skipping patch 1.06 for the consoles. They went from 5 just straight to the 7. So now when it releases, it's going to release for all consoles and PCs at the same time, and everything is going to be up to date and on
will that
par,
include?
So.
Is that including this coming patch?
Yeah, 1.07 is the movement, the inventory, the...
Gotcha.
Everything.
Or further
and the
movement.
Right, correct. So
here's optional. So if you do like the weighted movement,
yeah, there's a toggle
there, but
I believe in the
so
options.
It's if you want Geralt to run like Geralt, you will. If you want him to run like Batman,
I also like that they removed the
Z targeting
weight for crafting items.
Oh yeah,
so
is
alchemy
there a big
items
weight on that? I'm trying to remember.
I mean, as you just
it adds
stuff,
up, right?
It adds up.
So. Oh, wait. Sorry. I'm sorry. I was thinking like W-A-I-T, like
timers
or something.
No. Oh, they're adding that now.
And you can pay to skip them.
Sure.
No.
Do you want some bottle caps?
But yeah, so I'm just wondering, like, are any of you guys still playing The Witcher 3? I made it about 15 hours in, and I haven't gone back yet because of the bugs.
This is for sure going to get me to continue pressing on, but I'm still in no man's land. I've been playing regularly, but I'm taking my sweet time with it. Before I move forward with any of the quests, I actually explored the entirety of the map and just kind of hit all the quests.
The entirety? Like,
of
the whole game map?
Of no man's land right now.
Are you going from question mark to question mark?
Right.
Oh,
clearing
oh,
all the question
oh,
marks, is, just kind of getting a feel for
no,
the...
Is no man's land the starting zone?
No.
No, it's the next one with like Novigrad and all that.
Oh, okay. So. Sorry, I don't know what they named the zones. I know Novigrad, though.
But yeah, so I think this will definitely make me continue to press forward in the game and the story because it did get a little stale exploring. I didn't find the environments to be as unique as they initially made them out to be.
I like that they're listening to their player base and actually adjusting their game accordingly to a certain point. It hasn't been a lot of like internet rage about it, but it's like, hey, it'd be cool if this was different, and then they're actually implementing that.
Yeah, which I like, but I mean, let's not forget that the majority of these patches are fixing game-breaking bugs or, you know, seriously debilitating bugs or things preventing people with certain hardware from running it properly. Yep. And, you know, I'm just curious, what do you guys think about, you know, CD Projekt Red is considered, like, basically the gold standard for consumer-friendly developers, and even they release games that are broken for several consoles at launch. You know, they were broken on, it was broken on PC because of the experience glitch and a couple of other like big bugs.
Let me tell you about open world games. They're usually just broken as hell.
Yeah, I guess you could say that, but I mean, I can think of a lot of open world games that started out playing better than, I mean, this is not the best open world game launch I've ever seen by any means.
But you think of things like Fallout, New Vegas,
Skyrim.
Well, Bethesda,
like, there's a lot
pretty,
of weird things,
sure,
that
but
happen.
Though Bethesda's well known for having poorly optimized PC, yep, games at launch. I don't know that that's necessarily,
well,
because they're
even
open
their
world.
Console games weren't up to par when they launched.
Right. And CD Projekt Red, like, also,
you'd
for,
think
for
though
Witcher
on their third
2,
foray, they'd be improving. I know, you're right.
Yeah.
The Witcher 2 was, I mean, they had to redo the dang tutorial for that game.
They
I
had
mean,
to
talk
make
about
a tutorial for
QA.
It.
There was a tutorial. It was just, like, super, super long and vague.
Yeah.
It, like, then they brought it back and made the, like, arena tutorial or whatever. But I don't know. I think I'm happy because this is, they have succeeded in making the games more accessible,
yep,
in terms of, you know, gamers who aren't into the really long-winded stuff are getting more, and it's becoming more and more approachable. But it's less accessible from the point of you can't play it out of the... Like, I don't know. I mean, I really do feel like a game-breaking experience bug is really a damning piece of evidence.
Right.
I mean, that's bad. I don't know how you miss something like that.
I don't know either.
Yeah.
I mean, it depends on where it is, too.
I mean, it's not unique. It was across all main quests.
Okay.
You would just not get experience from doing the quests. And this is a game where you cannot grind experience, so...
Yeah.
I mean, I think you technically
It's very, very hard.
It's
monsters give you nothing.
Yeah, they give you, like, literally fractions of what you get for quests. Yeah. So, anyways, though, so I'm excited about the new patch. I'm definitely going to be revisiting it afterwards.
Too.
Actually, I'll probably be restarting my profile, too, because, A, I want to kind of see some of the other choices I can make
for
the first 15.
You know how to play Gwent now.
Yes.
So you start off and you just
I don't.
Kill.
I still don't understand how to play Gwent. Everyone says it's so fun.
I figured it out, and it is fun once you figure it out.
Everybody says, you know what, I'll just stick with Hearthstone, thanks. I don't like...
have a separate window with Hearthstone on it.
I just really don't like games in my games. I didn't like it in Final Fantasy IX. I didn't like
it. What about in GTA 4?
What about
you like playing darts and pool?
No.
And
Triple Triad.
I don't even know what you're...
Triple Triad was the card game from 8.
Oh, I didn't play.
And then
eight
Tetra Master was 9.
I didn't play like any of 8 because
both,
I hated the story.
We should do a podcast on games within games. We can rank them.
Yeah, totally. But for now, I rank them all as not as good as the game they're in. But for now, wait. Actually, now that I think about it, Animal Crossing is a close one because it's got some.
Spy
really
Fox
good.
Had
oh, yeah,
a fantastic game within a game.
All right, fair enough. So maybe we will
Spy
do
Fox?
A feature on that. That would be fun. But for now, let's move on to. Dragon Age Inquisition's new DLC. This is, which I just want to touch on this one, but I think I want to make sure this is just like a PSA for owners of the previous generation consoles. Dragon Age Inquisition, the next DLC, is not going to be available for Xbox 360 or PS3. It will only be coming to the current gen consoles.
Have they said if it's a technical reason? Or if it's just like, it's too many resources going to a version that people might not have purchased?
They haven't that I've seen. However... this isn't an MMORPG. I mean, I don't really expect technical advances from an expansion. I mean, it's not even an expansion, it's DLC.
Right.
I mean, it's all they're doing is adding new assets in, probably, and like, you know, reworking some meshes and textures so that they can, you know, it's a lot of asset reuse when you do DLCs and stuff, so I have trouble believing that they can justify.
like there has to be some reason, whether it's,
I mean, I'm sure it's
monetary
that it costs
or,
a ton of money to port it to those consoles.
To five different things.
Yeah, and I'm sure that also it's a huge pain to have to downgrade the game to run on them.
Yep.
Because, I mean, that wasn't an amazing-looking game, but it wasn't bad-looking.
No, not at all.
At least, like, for this, I'm not heartbroken about it, obviously, because I do have it on PS4. Or I'm looking to get it on PC soon, too. But at least they're letting people know ahead of time that they aren't going to be supporting it.
I think the unfortunate part is that, you know, they sold people on it was going to be cross-generational, and now, you know, I feel like they're obligated to
I literally did not know until the day it came out that it's coming out on 360 and PS3.
Until I was reading about this, I didn't know it was available for the other consoles.
Right.
But that said, I do agree. I mean, I'm with Max on this. Like, I don't think it's acceptable to sell it for the console and then not. I mean, they should have told people when they released the original version.
Yeah. Unless they sold it for, like, Wii U, then we'd understand, but for everything else,
right. Now, it's kind of funny, though. I think for some reason, I might be more offended by this than I am about most exclusivity deals. So,
that's much worse.
That's much worse, for sure. I think that it's just the broken expectation that bothers me so much.
Yeah.
It's kind of dirty because they even mentioned that, you know, with this latest update, the save transfers are out there to get it from Xbox 360 to 1 and PS3 to 4. And it just seems like a dirty way to shoo people into, okay, time to get that upgrade.
Unless they gave them like, hey, you have this copy on this console. If you happen to have a PS4 like or an Xbox One now, right, you get that for free or for like a $10.
I think it'd be even fair to say, yeah, $10 like GTA 5.
Yeah, well, right when the new consoles came out, they did that for Black Flag. They did it for a bunch of games.
Exactly.
That would be fair, but yeah, I get what you're saying. That is a little bit dirty. Just like, hey, we've got this file transfer thing. Let's do it.
Right, exactly. And so, I mean, anyways, I don't want to stick on this too long, but just a warning to our console peasant friends. Make sure that you
there go our listeners.
I'm joking, of course. Make sure that you
he's not.
Make sure that you don't, you know, buy this game for the old consoles going forward, because you're probably Dragon Age usually does have fairly good DLC and you'll probably want it. Moving along, if I haven't alienated all of you yet. This should be quite interesting. Our last topic for today, PS4 owners are petitioning Sony for improvements to the PlayStation Network service. Apparently, fans have taken to NeoGAF, Reddit, and Twitter to voice their complaints about the lack of bug fixes and features that are running on PlayStation Network, and that does including, and this is probably the one that would bother me most, the every single holiday, the entire PlayStation Network goes down. And it's not a hacker. It's they can't handle their own
players. They want you to go outside, Henry.
Yeah, I guess.
Spend time with family.
But I like virtual fireworks.
Throw some snowballs, damn it.
That's what Minecraft's for.
That's true.
Anyways, that's true. Though, I mean, so... They have like a bunch of what I think are fairly reasonable requests. I'm just going to read a couple, and I know John, you've got some issues with some of these, but I still would like to just get them out, and then you can take them one by one.
Sure.
So these are the top five ones that are being reported right now, and these are things that I would all just FYI to people. These are all available on Steam. I'm not sure if these features are available on Xbox One at the moment.
Somewhat,
but. The first one is online offline status change, basically an invisible mode so that you can play games online without your friends like being able to see that you're online. If you don't want to talk to people or something, or you're avoiding one of the people on your friends list but can't work up the courage to unfriend them or whatever, you know, that I think it's important.
That's so, fair. I mean distractions.
Exactly.
Like sometimes you just don't want to distract.
I can't stand it when I'm watching, you know, capture footage and it's just constant messages being sent.
Try playing MKX online and then like a message coming through or something telling you like, hey, your friend's in a party, right, you can join them now.
Exactly.
I don't like it.
Exactly. Their second request is an enhanced user profile page that will show their favorite most played games, screenshots and recordings that they take from within the PlayStation Network, because you already are capable of taking and sharing screenshots and video.
Yep.
And also, they'd like your game wish list, which you can already create on the PlayStation Network. They'd like it to be visible so people can know what gifts they'd be interested in. And also deeper activity sections with, like, time played statistics, like highest rank reached, I'm guessing, for certain games, that kind of thing. Last but not least, because I know this is one you particularly took issue with, viewing friends' online statuses across PlayStation 3, PlayStation 4, and PS Vita. So, John, why don't you just jump right in? I know you have a lot to say about this.
I don't know if it's a lot to say, but I could have swore if I log onto my PS4 and I look at my friends list, I could see who's playing what on PS3 or possibly Vita, or at least see that they're online.
Sure, maybe
and
they're
send
online.
Them messages.
I'm gonna have
I don't
to
know,
assume
I don't
that
know
if
I could see
this...
if what like what they're playing or what they're doing, but I believe I could see that they're online.
Sure, I think you're probably right. I have to imagine though, if it made it onto such a fairly popular petition, sure, that there's some level of it that's not being met.
And before we started recording, I did say I don't know if you can see that stuff on PS3.
Sure,
I believe on Vita you can see if someone's online on PS3,
sure,
or possibly PS4, but I don't know if from PS3 you could see it on the other ones. Like that seems like a pretty easy fix.
Yeah, it seems very easy. I mean, that's been something that's been integrated to a lot of stuff for a
Xbox
while.
Xbox One does have that.
Yeah, and I mean, I think of like Steam. I always know. I mean, you can be playing Steam on a Mac, and I still know what you're playing and how long you've been playing it for, and I can right click and join your game because
sure,
PCs are cool. Like,
Yeah, it's a that's a unified platform.
Exactly.
Too, so.
But then, what do you think about some of these other points? Like, do you take issue with any of those?
I mean, the online offline stuff. There are times where I just want to shut that off. Like I said, like I don't want people sending me messages or friend requests if I'm in the middle of a match of Mortal Kombat X. I guess my big issue with it is the whole petition thing. Like,
We've seen petitions succeed lately. Like, a fan outrage actually this year has done more for pro-consumer gaming movements than really.
And the whole point is just having their voices heard.
Right. I think that it's more about a show of force.
Sure. But it seems like everything these days is, we're pissed online. Let's sign a petition. Like, we don't like that. I don't know. Like, we don't like that Ninja Turtles is going to be on Nickelodeon. Let's sign a petition about it.
Yeah, like, I mean, I guess, but I mean, I think you're right, but I don't necessarily think that this is an issue that's abusing.
I feel
said
like people
system.
Are so just deaf to it now.
Well, how else are you going to reach out to a developer?
Write them letters.
I mean,
sternly,
really? Because I mean, that's what they're doing. I mean, they are. Sure. It's an online petition.
Yeah,
the equivalent of writing a letter.
And the thing that I've thought about is they actually made a website for it.
Yeah, it's like a real movement.
Right. I mean, is it?
I mean, it looks like it. I mean, it looks more like a real movement than a lot of the like hashtag activism movements.
It's a nicer thing than like a change.org petition.
Well, and this is not. I like this too because I don't feel like it's really going after anyone. They're asking. They have very reasonable requests. This isn't reactionary in any way. This is the console's been out for a year and a half, 2 years now. I mean, these are not unreasonable requests, and I can't imagine they'd take that much work to fix. But I mean, maybe they would because these people. I mean, Sony can't even keep the. I find it insane that you can't play on holidays. That blows my mind, and it's consistently true. I have multiple friends with PS4s who I'll go out on our porch and I'll be smoking a cigarette, and one of them will come up to me and say, "Hey, what are you doing out here?" And I'll be like, "Oh, you know, just hanging out. What are you up to?" And oh, PlayStation Network's down again. It's just exactly. I mean, it's depressing. I feel bad.
I never really run into that personally. I guess that's my side of things. Is
got to be more social, man.
It's overrated. Hide in the house and just play single player games the entire time. And I guess that's where a lot of it comes from for me is I really don't see many of these problems on the PlayStation Network. I don't care about it, trophies. So like they do ask for continuous trophy syncing on here, which Xbox has been doing this since 2005 when the Xbox 360 came out with achievements. You had offline achievements. I'm surprised this isn't a thing. PlayStation.
I didn't even know it wasn't a thing.
I mean, I don't care either, but a lot of people do. There's a reason achievement that people are still making trophies and achievements for every new game.
People like them.
I don't care either.
Yeah.
It's not an unreasonable request at all. And I've heard that.
I'm surprised that wasn't something that was just built into the OS.
Right. And you know what else? I mean, this isn't on their list, but I have heard about this from multiple people that. One of the other issues with the PS4 is trophy syncing is one thing, but apparently save games don't sync super well to the cloud either. There are instances of people playing at their friend's house, saving it to the cloud, going home, and their progress hasn't been loaded yet.
The weird thing with cloud saves with that is playing a lot of games these days, it wants to auto-upload recorded videos.
See, I don't have to worry about that on PC, so I mean, I don't understand why you'd have to worry about it on consoles.
I mean, they do have things in like the ATI graphics enhancer thing that wants to record stuff constantly. I'm sure the NVIDIA experience wants to do that as
well. It has shadow play, but it's opt-in.
Sure. It's not for the
and it's not AMD posting stuff. It either. It's saving it locally, as I understand. I mean,
yeah, but that's filling up your hard drive.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, I suppose you're right. I don't play on consoles, so I mean, I don't really play on consoles that much, so I don't have to worry about not being able to expand my hard drive. I mean, that's such a
but
not
it's an annoyance.
Concern.
Like,
not for me. I mean, when was the last time you couldn't? Don't you have like 300 gig, you know, external hard drives laying around from your life? I mean,
no,
and a bunch of you don't have flash drives laying around everywhere.
I have a 320 gig hard drive in my computer and a 1 terabyte external drive.
Yeah, that's a lot of storage,
right? But also, if that gets filled up with stuff, I have to delete that myself. Also, if stuff gets uploaded to my PlayStation Cloud stuff, I have to go delete that too. It's an annoyance.
I don't understand why you have to delete it.
Because it takes up your space.
If it's saved to the cloud, why is it taking up space on your machine?
It takes up space in the cloud. So if I want to save stuff to the cloud, it's
okay. Well, no room. In that case, that's your problem because Steam has unlimited cloud save storage.
Thank you, PC Master Race.
Look, I'm just saying. Well, I'm just saying. Like, I'm not trying to be.
It must be so nice up there,
grovel peasant.
Hey. Don't get mad at me because I'm telling the truth here. I get it. It's fun to – you're right, and I poke fun a lot at the consoles, but I do see like real benefits to playing certain games on console, and I understand why a lot of people prefer console.
Sure.
I'm just saying as far as like cloud storage, you don't have enough space. Like that's Sony's deal. That's not a
problem. No, that's what I was saying. It's annoying, but it would automatically – take these videos and then upload them to the cloud. So every time that I would turn off my PS4, turn it back on, it would give me like 9 messages saying that they could not upload it because my cloud space is full.
Yeah. That's so weak. They shouldn't have a max cloud space.
Well, they also shouldn't be auto uploading that
stuff. No, they shouldn't. So that's actually, that would bother me a lot.
I would put that one up on the list.
Yeah, definitely.
It's something you could turn off, but turn it off by default.
Yeah,
please.
Exactly. That would be nice because, you know, yeah, that's kind of insane.
Yeah.
Max, do you have any thoughts on any of this stuff?
No, I mean, as a recent PS4 owner, I can't say I've played too much online, but it is good to see that, you know, people are speaking out about the issue since, like we've already said, every holiday weekend you're seeing some PSN errors, issues, what have you, and,
sure.
You know, it'll even drop off randomly in the middle of a week at times.
So. Right. So then do you guys think that this could actually... you know, create some change here, or do you think that this is probably just shouting into the wind?
I think it actually could just because of how organized and professional the approach is. I mean, if you look
at
the...
It's very polite.
Yeah, if you look at the website and the numbers amassing and everything like that, it, at the very least, especially with the reporting on it, is going to catch Sony's attention to some extent.
Yeah, I'm sure at very least we'll get a response.
Yeah, so, I mean, Sony's not, like... a hateful company. They're not going to just
not anymore. I mean, unless we forget.
They're very receptive to what people are looking to do
nowadays.
That's, I mean,
yeah.
Shenmue 3 is happening. Yeah. So that's kind
of. Well, it's a different world we live in.
It is.
But
it is.
Yeah, you're right.
Although
I don't know that I would credit Sony with Shenmue 3 happening fully, considering that they also wanted, you know, $2 million before they.
Sure, but they put it up on their platform.
No, I know.
Anyways, but they are more receptive now to. Looking at the fans' feedback and implementing
definitely.
It. So
definitely.
I wouldn't bet against it. That's all.
Okay.
I
wouldn't bet against it either, and I hope to see that kind of change. I always like a change for the better. Anyways, though, guys, we're going to wrap things up. We're bringing it to a close. Thanks so much for tuning in to 105 The Ticket's video game podcast from Cold Omaha. As always, you can see us on 105theticket.com and also on iTunes. We're on the iTunes store. Please leave us a like, subscribe, comment. We can always use some feedback. And make sure you stick around because right after this, we're going to be airing my interview with Steve Downes, the voice of Master Chief. So thanks so much for tuning in, guys, and game on. Hey guys, as promised, we're going to be ending the show today with something special. This week, I had the opportunity to interview Steve Downes, who you may know as the voice behind the protagonist of the Halo series, Master Chief. Now, unfortunately, I lost about the first minute and a half of the recording, so if it seems a little bit like we jump right into it, you'll have to forgive me, but we got all the really good stuff here for you, so stay tuned and I hope you enjoy. So, it was a pretty big deal when 343 took over development of the series from Bungie, and I'm just curious, did that transition change your interaction with the developers at all?
It was a different experience, but quite honestly, in the end, ultimately, it was better as far as I was concerned. I mean, Bungie was great, don't get me wrong, and obviously without them, I wouldn't be talking to you. But when we got to Halo 4, which was really... 343's first, you know, real foray into the game by having complete control. I found myself being a lot more involved, and even from the, you know, with the writers and all of that. And when I was working with Bungie, that really didn't happen. I mean, the demands on me for Master Chief in the first two games were, and first three really were not as great as they were with, you know, with Halo 4. So it was real exciting for me to be able to, you know, get more of a ground up kind of feeling to it when we got to Halo 4.
Sure, definitely. And I can see why you'd say that, because, I mean, you really are getting to know Master Chief a lot more in some of the later games. Instead of it being sort of a faceless Marine, it's more of a, like, we get to really know what the character behind the mask is.
Yeah, and you know what? I mean, I did too. You know, when you've been doing it, the same character for, well, let's see, what's it been, 14 years, something like that? You do sort of kind of get to know the guy.
Sure.
And, you know, to be able to be a little more expressive with his character, as we were able to do with Halo 4, was really exciting for me. And it's kind of what I always hoped would happen. And, you know, it did, you know, with each game, his character would evolve, all the characters, Cortana and, you know, everybody.
Sure.
The characters became more involved and evolved. And so it was, you know, I was hoping that that would be the progression as we got to Halo 4, and fortunately it was.
That's really cool. And so then I'm kind of curious, because it sounds like you have, like, a little bit of input there too, which is pretty awesome. How much do you, you know, how much does your performance inform the story of the game? Like you said, you were working with writers and stuff. Do you, like, have some influence over where some stuff goes, or just, is it more stuff like, I want to say it this way, that kind of thing?
Well, you know, I had all kinds of input, whether it was taken or not.
Sure.
It's another matter. But, to be honest with you, really, you know, first of all, I thought the writing in Halo 4 was superb, and there really wasn't much for me to add to it.
Sure.
You know, by the time we got to it, but being able to have conversations with the writers is that you really get it helps to inform me as to their intent. I mean, it's one thing to read words on a page. It's another thing to talk to the person who wrote those words.
Sure.
And be able to, you know, really, you know, get where he was coming from, and also to talk with the directors, you know, to really, you know, see what their vision is. And that really helps you as a performer to put something into the character, rather than just looking at words on a page and then reading them back. When you get that sort of, you know, sort of backstory, it really helps to, you know, for me at least, to approach the character in a little more insightful kind of way.
Sure, absolutely. And I was actually kind of wondering about that. I'm just curious, I'm assuming that you do a lot of your reads, like, solo. Like, how does that work out for, like, conversations and stuff like that? Or are you recording with some of the other voice actors? And also, are they, like, giving you art or something, so you have an idea kind of what the setting is? I'm assuming the game isn't well enough developed at this point for you to know exactly what it is.
Yeah, well, that's true. Well, I mean, you know, that is a whole evolution in itself. Going back to Halo Combat Evolved, when I recorded those sessions for the first game, I didn't know what he looked like. They had no visual reference for me whatsoever. It was just really a conversation with Marty O'Donnell about the game and the character and his role in it. So I had no idea what he looked like. He was just, you know, this big green guy, this big green, you know, badass his instructions to me, or his direction to me, was really sort of think of him as like a, you know, a Clint Eastwood type from the spaghetti westerns, you know, and you know, sort of that, and the Dirty Harrys and all that. Think of him in that way, as a man of few words, but when he did speak, you know, somebody usually died.
Right, exactly. I love it. What he does say counts, exactly.
Yeah, what he does say counts. So from that, it was an evolutionary process, and obviously after the first game came out, then I had a complete understanding of, you know, what was happening visually. But yes, up until Halo 4, all the work was solo. It was me and Marty, or, you know, a couple of the writers maybe on the other side of the production studio, and that was it. Now, when we did Halo 4, I did do a lot of that work in Seattle with Jen Taylor, who plays Cortana. So it was the first time her and I actually got to work together and read together. And it lent, first of all, just a lot more fun. Secondly, it lent, at least for me, a lot. It really helped me to put some emotion into that character, because, as you know, with Halo 4, there was a lot of stuff going down between him and Cortana, and that relationship really was sort of fleshed out in a big, big way, ultimately with a rather tragic ending. But to be able to do that with her in the room and us to be able to work together and talk about it. Excuse me, that's my dog. It was just a tremendous experience, and I really, really enjoyed it.
Well, that's really, really cool. I can definitely see that, and it's interesting too, because I do feel kind of like the Cortana from the first three games is more of just a straight-up AI, where it would make more sense for her to be kind of responding as though it's been translated through a system, kind of like when you talk to Siri or something like that, or I guess Cortana, of course.
Cortana, yes.
Which, actually, that reminds me, I'm just curious, have they considered you, maybe you can't talk about it, but you have any interest in doing the male voice for Windows's Cortana?
Well, there have been no discussions in that regard. Sure. And I think it would probably, I mean, you never know, but I think she and her character were much more suited for doing that than had it been Master Chief. I think that would have been a little weird for Master Chief giving you directions to the local pizza parlor and all that. You know?
Yeah, maybe. It'd be a cute nod for the nerds, though. I know I wouldn't mind getting directions.
It might be. But after a while, it might get a little old.
Fair enough.
She does such a phenomenal job. And I talked to her about, you know, what goes into that. And it's really a very long and intricate process to do that. And she was well suited for the task.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think we all agree she did a great job as well. And now I'm just curious, I know you've done a lot of work in radio in addition to some of your gaming voice work too, and I'm just curious, how is that like compared to each other? I'm sure that they're both fun in different ways. I do a little bit of radio stuff, you know, I'm the head of IT and I do engineering stuff over here, so I'm just curious, what do you think about the two worlds?
Well, they were very very separate for me, to be honest with you. You know, when we first did Halo 1, the two, you know, I worked for a classic rock radio station, so the demographic was a little bit older, and really not the gaming demographic at the time. So the two worlds never really crossed. You know, people who listened to me on the radio were not, in most cases, not the people who were hearing me in Halo. Now, over the years, that's changed. And, you know, I especially noticed it, you know, in 2012, when Halo 4 came out, that the worlds had indeed blended, and that the people who were listening to classic rock radio, many of them were gamers now.
Yes.
So, you know, those two worlds sort of did collide. But I've really, just as a performer, like I would never do Master Chief bits on the radio, you know, and it just, the character, you know, just didn't, I have a lot of reverence for the character, I suppose.
It's actually really cool. I guess I'm kind of glad that, I mean, as much as they did a lot of partner stuff with Frito-Lay and, you know, Pepsi and stuff, I'm kind of glad that Master Chief didn't tell me in his voice to go buy Pepsi.
Or to be the 10th caller at 591.
Right.
You know, whatever.
Exactly. Yeah, definitely.
Halo. I just, you know, I didn't want to do that. It would have felt disingenuous and one of the things about working with 343 and with Bungie, both of them, is you really get a feel for their reverence for the story and the game. And believe me, there have been many opportunities, I'm sure, for them to you know, to market Halo in a way that would have been a little crass, shall we say?
Sure.
And yes, there's been the Mountain Dew cups and all of that, mm-hmm. but believe me, they could have gone so much further than that and didn't, because they respect the. They respect the franchise, and I guess most importantly, they respect the fans. And so I sort of carry that with me, and that, it's every once in a while we might get into a discussion on the air about it, but I really kind of kept the two things separate.
Cool, and I can totally respect that. I think that's really cool, actually, because I agree. I think it does keep that level of reverence, because yeah. I definitely do hold Master Chief on a pedestal.
Well, you know, a lot of people do, and I tell you, when I go to, I'm always aware that, when I go to conventions and stuff, is that, people have grown up with this character in a sometimes in a very personal kind of way, much more so than just a character in a video game, and I can't tell you how many times I've, talked to people who have said, they were going through some difficult period in their life, and it was Halo that got them through, or Master Chief gave them some strength that they needed at the time. And when you hear that enough, you really begin to understand that this is a it's kind of a responsibility to do this kind of work, more so than just your average voiceover or your average. Voiceover for a cartoon or some sort of animated thing.
Sure,
it seems to be deeper than that, and so I try to remember that in everything I do that involves Master Chief or Halo.
That's really cool, because yeah, I would agree. I mean, it's really interesting. We're seeing this explosion of all these comic book movies and stuff right now, and they're saying comic books are mythology for this generation. I'll be interested. I think Master Chief may end up being the mythology for the next generation, that kind of video game characters.
Yeah, I think there's no doubt about it. I think I've always believed that one of the big reasons for the success of Halo, Halo wasn't, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't believe Halo was the first first-person shooter game.
Oh, no, not by a large margin. I'd say it was about 15 years late to that game.
Yeah, so yes, the graphics were spectacular for its each and every version of the game. The graphics are always state-of-the-art and top-notch and all that. But, it's not the only video game that had great graphics and great animation. So what is it? What is it about Halo that has made it, something more than the rest? And my contention was always that it was the story, that they perhaps were one of the first, if not the first, to put as much time and effort into the story of the game and as they were into the sort of the technical aspects of it.
Yep, definitely. I would agree. Because, we did see mostly, by and large, just multiplayer deathmatch first-person shooters back in the day. And now we're seeing a lot. I mean, nowadays it's unheard of for the most part to see a first-person shooter ship without some kind of story-driven campaign.
Yeah.
I mean, you're definitely right. Halo is the only video game series that I've read books for.
Yeah. I mean, there's books. Comic books. Obviously now there's some live action stuff, and there's all this world that has expanded well beyond the parameters of the game, and that can only be driven by the fact that people are interested in that story.
Sure. And that stuff is so cool. I mean, I've seen some of the fan stuff you've done. I got to see you wearing neck down, wearing the Spartan armor, which was pretty cool and all that.
that was somebody's Photoshop.
Oh, was it? Okay, gotcha.
I've never worn the gear.
We'll have to get you in it sometime. I'm sure it'd be awesome.
That may be a tough sell.
All right. Well, I'm just curious then. You've done a lot of fan interaction stuff. You're saying how cool it is to work with games and stuff. Did you ever plan to wind up in video gaming or in the voice acting industry specifically? I know you did radio, but that transition.
Well, no, voiceover. Yes. I mean, when I worked in LA for many years, and during that period of time in the 80s, you know, I sort of branch out into doing voiceover, commercial voiceover and narration and that kind of stuff. But no, the video game thing was just a total accident. When I moved to Chicago, I was here, and Bungie was originally located in Chicago before they got bought up by Microsoft and they moved to Seattle. They were originally a Chicago-based company. And Marty O'Donnell, who did all the casting for the original games and all the music and all of that, used to listen to me on the radio, and he called me in to do a character, minor character for a small PC game called Septera Core. Very small. I don't encourage you to go look it up. It's pretty primitive now. But it was the first time Marty and I ever worked together. And then about a year later, he called me up again and said, we got this other thing. Would you be interested in doing it? And obviously I was. and that's how it all got started. So it was I'd like to say it was some grand design of mine, but it really wasn't. It was just a happy accident. And then even when we did the first Halo game, I wasn't a gamer. I didn't understand the world of gaming that well, and didn't know even back then what a sort of a burgeoning kind of industry it was becoming. And so it was all news to me. And then to be able to voice the character that happened to be the icon of the genre was just, like I said, just being in the right place at the right time and loving it. So that was no great plan of mine, but I'm sure glad it happened.
Yeah, and that is really, really interesting. And so I'm just curious, have you kind of reached out? Do you know? I'm sure you know a lot more about gaming now than before. But do you have like a favorite one? Have you played some of the Halo games, or are you more of the hands off? I know some people don't like to touch anything they've worked on. I know I can't listen to my podcast for at least a day or two.
Yeah, it's funny. I am kind of like that, I guess. Anytime when the new game comes out, obviously, I mean, I don't play. I mean, not that I haven't tried, but. It apparently is not my forte.
Sure.
When Halo 2 came out, I decided, you know what, you should really, you know, get an Xbox and figure out what this is all about and, you know, have some, you know, start playing it. And I was just so bad at it. I tried for hours and hours and I was like, man, you're just not cut out for this. Sure. So I sort of gave that part of it up. And, I was never any good at, you know, like Mario Brothers or any of the early stuff. I tried it. It just wasn't my thing, you know. I wasn't even very good at pinball. So, I don't know, it's some kind of hand-eye coordination thing that I need to work on. But I just certainly do have a better understanding of the gaming industry and the people who play it. And I have a high regard for him. I mean, you know, I've gotten my ass kicked by more than one 11-year-old from time to time. So it can be a humbling experience, I assure you.
Sure, absolutely. And so, I mean, I'm sure you haven't played them, since you haven't played them extensively, can you tell me, like, what was your favorite to work on? It's kind of sounding like 4. I'm thinking maybe 4.
Well, you know, the stock answer, and it's true, really, is my favorite one is the one I just did.
Of course.
And obviously that's Halo 5, which I can't wait for you guys to see and play.
So excited.
Beyond that, Halo 4... for the reasons that I stated before about being able to work with Jen, being able to be, you know, have a close communication with the writers and the directors, and the fact that the storyline, you know, was fleshed out, you know, for Master Chief and his relationship with Cortana and with Halo in general, that was obviously the most fun for me to do. I mean, you know, going back to the first game, it was a lot of grunts and you know, that was it. Not that that wasn't fun, but it was certainly not what Halo 4 was for me as a actor. You know what I mean? To be able to have a little more to say and a little more emotion to express, and the challenge of it. I mean, the challenge of doing Master Chief when he has more of an emotion to show is that you know, he's not an emotional being.
Right.
And he doesn't, he's not comfortable with showing his emotions. So how do you portray a character, A, who you can't see, right? B, who is uncomfortable expressing emotions, yet he is emotive, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's feeling something, you know, when Cortana meets her fate, you know, he's obviously upset, but, you know, Master Chief is not going to, you know, he's not going to start bawling.
Right. I mean, no Star Wars nose to the sky.
No, I don't think that's going to happen. But you gotta. So that was a real challenge for me to be able to do that, and hopefully we did it well. But ultimately, that's up to the people who you know, to the fans. But certainly that it was a challenge for me to do it, and that makes it exciting. You know, anytime you have something that's like, wow, okay, let's see if we can pull this off. It's very exciting. So yeah, I mean, Halo 4 was ultimately the most satisfying of all of the ones that I've done so far.
Sure, that's really cool. It's really interesting to just get that extra level of insight, because I feel like a lot of us gamers don't always think about just how much work really goes into every single aspect of these games, from the writing to the voice acting to like the animation and all that stuff. How it all, because we just get to see the final product,
yeah,
and we think, oh, it's beautiful, it's perfect, it looks so good, it must be easy. Nope.
It is incredible. I got to tell you, you know, getting a little peek behind the scenes of what goes into, and I only see, you know, a small portion of what goes into putting these things together. But it is really a Herculean task to get this all to what you end up seeing. And in the case of Halo 5, what you're going to end up seeing on October 27th, just the amount of time, manpower, blood, sweat, and tears that goes into it. And it really is an amazing thing to watch. You know, even from my limited perspective, it really, I have such high regard for the people who put this together that you're right. But you know what? That's the idea. The idea is you shouldn't be thinking about all of those things as a fan when you get the game home and you put it in your machine and you start playing. You should think exactly what you just said. Wow, this is cool.
Exactly. Know? Yeah, that's, absolutely.
You know, if you start thinking about all the behind the scenes stuff, then we did something wrong.
Right. It kind of makes me think of like the old like John Carpenter's The Thing, where it's those prosthetics only look good from one angle, but the only angle you see them from, you think it's real.
That's right. It's like one of the guys, one of the directors of Halo, of the cinematics, said, you know, you don't look too far this way and don't look too far that way.
Right.
Just keep it right here, and it looks great. And that's exactly true.
That's really, really cool. I love that. So do you have any announced projects that you can talk about at all that are coming up here?
No, you know, I just actually retired from the radio business about 4 or 5 months ago, in March, actually. After a long time doing it, I decided it was, time to step away. I mean, it was a great run and I had a great time, but I was really sort of done with it. And so I left behind the station that I work for here in Chicago, The Drive, left mornings in March of this year. And to be honest with you, Henry, all I'm doing now is just sort of, you know, enjoying not getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
And there's a lot to be said for that, let me tell you. And, you know, sort of catching up on things that I didn't have time to do, you know, working a radio job. So right about the time that I was retiring from radio was when the work for me on Halo 5 really started to gear up. So the timing was perfect that I was in the past. That was always a bit of a struggle to be able to give both parties the time that they wanted. And this time I was able to devote 100% of my efforts to what I was doing with Halo 5. So, you know, that turned out to be and I could really enjoy it and not have to worry about, you know, rushing back to, you know, do the radio show. And so I've, you know, been doing that and then just general commercial voiceover work, but nothing else in the video game world. I mean, one of the things about the blessing, I suppose, and the curse, if you want to call it that, it really isn't, but of being involved with a character like Master Chief is that you're sort of typecast and pigeonholed into that.
Voice is so iconic, people are hear you and just go, oh, it's Master Chief.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if I had a nickel for every time I've auditioned for a Star Wars character, you know, I could have retired a long time ago. But I never booked one of them because, you know, there's I'm not, you know, there are a lot of really talented voiceover people who have a broad range. And I'm not one of them. I mean, I you know, have a range, but, you know, basically it all comes down to, you know, kind of what you hear, you know, with Master Chief more or less.
Sure.
I mean, I've done a few other things, but it really is, that's my, you know, sort of my go-to place. And, so consequently, I don't do a lot of other video game work. I've done a little animation work here and there. I did, the voice for, Star-Lord when, Disney was doing the Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes series a couple years back.
Yep.
But beyond that, it's mostly commercial work and a lot of free time, which I'm enjoying immensely.
maybe finally mess around with Halo again.
So maybe I'll finally. You're right. Maybe it's time for me to go back and give it another swipe. I think that's a good idea.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. Like, really, I can't tell you how exciting it is to be able to talk to a living legend himself, not to make too big of a deal out of it, but really.
Well, thank you, Henry. I appreciate that. And I listened a bit to your podcast. Sounds like you guys are having a lot of fun and doing some cool things. And I can't wait to hear what you guys have to say about Halo 5 when it comes out.
Awesome. We'll definitely do a special episode just for that. Thanks again for joining me, bud.
You're very welcome, Henry, and all the best. And give my best to Lisa, won't you?
Absolutely, will do.